Are you familiar with the Ottoman Turkish rule? Well, if not, we're going to go over that today. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Hi, you're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know. I'm Dr. Fred, your host for this short time we're together today. For those of you who have been following along, you know that we've been dealing with a subject based on my latest book called Rome Rising, and that book is available through Amazon.com. The series, as you're aware, takes us through the four beasts, the four empires of Daniel chapter 2 that lead up to the physical return of Jesus Christ. And what we're going to be getting into today is a little bit about the Ottoman Empire. So the reason we're covering this is because this is part of the fourth beast and how it segues, how it morphs from two legs, an east and a western Roman Empire, to the Turkish Empire, the Ottoman Empire, and to the various ways in which this particular empire or beast changed as time progressed. So the Ottoman Empire, or also called the House of Osman, grew out of the eastern leg of the Roman Empire. But by this time, when it came into existence, it was called the Byzantine Empire and was headed by Constantine. Now, the origins of the great civilization known as the Byzantine Empire can be traced to 330 AD, when the Roman Emperor Constantine I dedicated a new Rome on the site of the ancient Greek colony of Byzantium. And the ancient city of Byzantium had been founded by Greek colonists from Megara around 657. Now, in many ways, the Byzantine Empire was the successor of the Roman Empire in the Greek-speaking eastern part of the Mediterranean. Christian in nature, it was perennially at war with Muslims. Flourishing during the reign of the Macedonian emperors, its demise was the consequence of attacks by Seljuk Turks, Crusaders, and Ottoman Turks. Emphasis, well, you can't see it, but I added emphasis to the quote I just read, which was taken from history.com, because Muslims literally became a thorn in the flesh to every nation or culture that was not Islamic. This tension often broke out in wars and skirmishes that eventually gave rise to the Ottoman Empire. Ultimately, the Byzantine Empire fell to the growing Ottoman Empire in 1453. Now, think about how long that was. 1453. And we noted previously that all aspects of the Roman Empire lasted until around 1870 or so. That's not that long ago. Artillery actually made the difference in allowing the Ottoman Turks to overcome Constantinople, which at the time was the headquarters for Christianity. Now, of course, in between AD 330 and 1453, that's what, about 1100 years, the eastern part of the Roman Empire, or New Rome in Byzantium, went through growth cycles of its own. Nothing stays the same, especially in the Roman Empire. It went through many, many changes. We have the Germanic tribes of the Goths, the Visigoths, the Ostrogoths, and Vandals. They had begun chipping away at the outer edges of the Roman Empire. There were victories and losses until eventually the Muslims chased the Byzantines out of Levant, modern-day Turkey, Syria, and Lebanon. And then as an aside here, we notice that President Obama refers to ISIS not as ISIS, but as ISIL, I-S-I-L. That L in ISIL that he uses is Levant, because Levant included Israel, but Israel was not its own nation then. So there's some real nuancing going on here by President Obama. Now, by the early AD 1000s, Byzantine was in decline. The monarchs that ruled the empire were unable to completely maintain or manage the empire. And finally, in 1453, the Ottoman Empire conquered Constantinople, taking over its government. That was in 1453. Due to the decline of cultural life there, many artists and scholars fled to Italy and other areas, taking with them valuable manuscripts. Now, in essence, the Ottoman Empire was an empire created by Turkish tribes in Anatolia, one of the most powerful states in the world during the 15th and 16th centuries. It spanned more than 600 years and came to an end only in, get this, 1922, when it was replaced by the Turkish Republic and the various successor states in southeastern Europe and Middle East. Last time, we talked about the European Union, the EU, and if you look at a map of the European Union today, you will note that it incorporates much of the Byzantine Empire or the Byzantine Empire. All four empires or beasts of Daniel chapter 2 occurred, existed in roughly the same geographical area. However, as I've mentioned before, each new empire became greater and larger in scope due to the people and other nations and area, land area that it conquered. So in essence, even though the Byzantine Empire no longer exists, the Roman Empire no longer exists, the Ottoman Turkish Empire no longer exists, what have we got in place of it? The European Union. The European Union. And again, the Ottoman Empire virtually lasted until 1922. And it was replaced then by the Turkish Republic and various successor states. The Ottoman flag is bright red with a crescent moon and one star. Flags that Islamic countries use today often have the same motif. Now, if you look at any map of the Ottoman Empire, historians believed it to have had its beginnings in approximately AD 1300 and its official end, as I mentioned, in 1922. This length represents many changes, 600 years or so, and leaders, but in the end, it had a long run. The beginnings of the Ottoman Empire ran side by side with the old Byzantine Empire. It wasn't until 1453 that Constantinople was conquered under Mehmed II, M-E-H-M-E-D. Now, during the period from 1908 to 1922, the Ottoman Empire began its decline and eventual defeat. Turkish in origin, the Ottoman Empire represented the largest Islamic empire in history. Now today, Muslims will tell you that under the caliphate of the Ottoman Empire, non-Muslims were often treated as secondary citizens, especially if they were Christians or Jews. Now here's an interesting quote from an encyclopedia dealing with the Ottoman Empire. Quote, in the Ottoman Empire, in accordance with the Muslim Dhimmi system, D-H-I-M-M-I, Christians were guaranteed limited freedoms, such as the right to worship, but were treated as second-class citizens. Christians and Jews were not considered equals to Muslim. Testimony against Muslims by Christians and Jews was inadmissible in courts of law. They were forbidden to carry weapons or ride atop horses. That's interesting. Their houses could not overlook those of Muslims, and their religious practices would have to defer to those of Muslims, in addition to various other legal limitations. Now, I have a map in my book, by the way, on page 87, that shows the Ottoman Empire in its various stages since 1300 all the way through 1683. But you can look on the internet and find various maps of the Ottoman Empire and the stages that it went through. Now, let's get back to the word Dhimmi, D-H-I-M-M-I. This, in the Islamic legal system, is someone who is quote-unquote protected or quote-unquote guilty, depending upon how the Arabic word is used. We have English words that have various meanings, but they're the same word, like the word left. Left can mean someone who is on the left side of the street. Left can also mean how much money I have left in the bank. It's the same word, different meaning based on the context. It's the same thing in Arabic. Now, as author Robert Spencer notes, Christians and Jews are what are considered protected because of the revelations it is believed that Christians and Jews have received from God. But we're also considered guilty because we have rejected Muhammad. This puts the Jew and Christian at a lower status than the Muslim, and was first articulated by a guy named Umar ibn al-Khattab, who was caliph from 634 to 644. According to the Quranic commentary of Ibn Kathir, the Christians making this pact with Umar pledged the following, quote, "We made a condition on ourselves that we will neither erect in our areas a monastery, church, or a sanctuary for a monk, nor restore any places of worship that needs restoration, nor use any of them for the purpose of enmity against Muslims," unquote. That's from Robert Spencer's book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam, published in 2005 on page 49. Now, what this means, as Spencer points out, is that the Muslims could seize any church at any time if they chose to do so. The conditions that Christians agreed to essentially place them at a level far below the virtual or the Muslim, and it gave them virtually no rights. Now, aside from a secondary stature within Islam, dhimmi also refers to a system of taxation. Christians and Jews and other quote-unquote undesirables were allowed to remain and even live in the empire, provided they paid a tax to Islamic authorities. Now, what's happening today with ISIS? ISIS is either slaughtering or chasing out Christians and Jews. They're destroying their places of worship. They're destroying places that are believed to be valuable in the context of history, archaeological sites that have to do with Christianity and Judaism. They're not even worried about keeping Christians on as dhimmis, taxable slaves. They just want them gone. Within the Ottoman Empire, Christians and Jews were considered to be subject people, and as such, a tax was mandatory to be paid by Christians or those considered subject people. There were many other laws by which subject people must live. Any violation of the conditions meant that they could be killed or could be made to become full slaves. And the same attitude exists today within countries and even areas controlled by Islam. In Egypt, there have been numerous reports and articles about how Muslims have gone rampaging through one area to another, burning churches to the ground. On some occasions, the churches were filled with Christian worshipers. One article individually lists the specific churches that were destroyed by Muslim Brotherhood, and they're in double digits. Many within Islam or outside of Islam who are apologists for Islam will tell you that Jews had better experiences while in Muslim lands than in other parts of Europe considered Christian areas. It's simply not true. It is absolutely not true. Robert Spencer points out the origins of this myth, and we would do well to note it. PC spokesmen, he said, assert every day that even if the dhimmi really did subject Jews and Christians to ongoing and institutionalized discrimination and harassment, it certainly wasn't as bad as the way Jews were treated in Christian Europe. Historian Paul Johnson explains that in theory, the status of the Jewish dhimmi under Muslim rule was worse than under the Christians, since their right to practice their religion and even their right to live might be arbitrarily removed at any time. In practice, however, the Arab warriors who conquered half the civilized world so rapidly in the 7th and 8th centuries had no wish to exterminate literate and industrious Jewish communities who provided them with reliable tax incomes and served them in innumerable ways. The Ottoman Empire is fascinating, and we're going to continue with that next time we get together here at Study, Grow, Know. I certainly hope you will join me then. I thank you so much for joining me today, and it's always a pleasure to teach from God's Word and about history as explained in God's Word. So until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.